It is Thursday, the 21st of March, and this is episode 156 of Digital Outbox. Hello, welcome to another episode. I am Chris, and as ever, Ian's with me. Hello, Ian.
Hi, I'm Ian. Good evening.
And let's rock on with some news.
How disappointing. Yeah. I was waiting for a whole big, how are you?
We always do it, and I don't really care.
Good.
So let's get on with some news, because Samsung...
Screw you.
Samsung have launched the Galaxy S4, much touted, much rumoured, much leaked. But now we have the official specs... from Samsung, and initial impressions as well we've had, which have been a bit meh, it's a bit like the last one really. But they've added quite a few features, just none of which have looked good.
Well, you call them features.
Yeah. Basically, they've got things like they've got auto scrolling based on tilt. So basically, you can be holding your phone and tilt it to scroll. Apparently, that doesn't work very well.
But there's been apps that have done that before. They've kind of done crazy, like auto scrolly, move them around, and it's like it never really works. I never read constantly.
So it's one of those things that if you were in a brainstorming session, yeah, and you had a whiteboard, someone would say that, and you go, "Oh yeah, that's a really good idea. Let's do that." And then in practice, it hasn't worked, but they haven't decided to scrub it off the whiteboard. They've got look away from your phone and it will pause if you're watching a video, which sounds interesting. I quite like that as a concept.
Come on.
You can walk away from your phone and it will pause. In fact, it would work better if it was for DVD player rather than for your phone, right?
Yeah. I just think with video, maybe it's just me again. I don't like eyes locked on a video when I'm watching it.
Oh, I probably do.
So it's like...
Anyway, it's an interesting concept. I think would work more for their TVs and their Blu-ray players or whatever than anything else.
I guess the way I watch TV and stuff now is like I'm always paying half attention to everything.
Yeah, so but that's bad, isn't it? That's the sign of the times.
But it would be constantly stopping everything. Yeah. You know, just, like look at the TV, look at the... Which one's stopping?
The stream of consciousness would be a bit weird, wouldn't it, in your own head? It's got finger hover. We touched on that briefly the other day. So it knows where your finger is and it'll start doing previews even though you're not touching your screen.
Yes.
And it's also got some gesture-based things so you can waft your hand over the top of it to go forwards and backwards, say, on a website.
I can actually see the hovering one. I can see a little bit, you know, and I saw a couple of people saying, you know, if you're in the kitchen cooking,
yes,
and so all that kind of thing, and if you're muddy and you're outside and all that kind of stuff. The big wafty, because seeing you saw somebody using it, it was like big full. Yeah, I know the phone's big, but this whole hand movement. I've seen people using Kinect with more finesse than this.
Yeah, so it seemed like it was a whole ton of sort of additional bump on top of Android, which they've not. You know, it looks good on a feature list, but in reality, you know, the uses of them are pretty limited. And once you take away all those new features, then you're left with a phone that's pretty similar to the S3, really.
You say feature, I say tat.
Yeah, okay. And they've obviously gone massively again on their, is it Touch Sense they call themselves?
Yeah.
The UI over the top of Android. And again, if you're used to that, then that's fine. But I think Android's caught up so much now. Well, there's very little need for it.
Yeah, I guess what was crazy was when you saw this kind of the Touch Sense kind of options panel, and it was the way they were enabling, disabling all these extra features. It was like a crazy control panel. It looked like there was about 20 little things you can enable and disable.
Then again, Android has that kind of thing now based on widgets, raw form. But
that was all the little Samsung, the extra features. Like, do you want to turn on, you know,
Touch Sense? Do you want to waft your phone?
do you want to be able to like stop when you look away? And do you want all these little crazy things? I don't know.
But again, you know, people love that phone, and therefore, why move too far away from it? Effectively, if you'll have a bump in specs underneath, with a massive battery life as well, or massive battery, whether that leads to massive battery life, who knows. And they've integrated sort of Fitbit type features in as well. So it'll count your steps and monitor your progress through the day and stuff.
That was the only thing I thought was of interest.
Because for a mainstream user, that's great.
Exactly. And they also had a little, I don't think they showed it, but there's some sort of little band you can put on as well, which will track. So if you're wanting to run and you're not wanting to actually use the phone or take the phone, because obviously it's the size of a massive, massive thing. So
it's no bigger than the old one. It's still big, but it's no bigger than the old one.
Yeah, but
so that's a bit unfair.
Some people strap it to their arms for this. You need to strap it to, I don't know, your buttock or something to carry it around. But no, if you don't want to run with your phone, there's some sort of little band you can do. And as you were saying, it tracks. There's a whole lot of built-in tracking, which is really nice.
And does the sleeping thing that Fitbit does.
Does the sleeping.
So yeah, for Fitbit, and also
has a thermometer in it. It has a temperature gauge inside as well.
And a humidity gauge.
And that's my little... Yes, that's
my
little...
Why else do you need a humidity gauge? What the hell use is that?
Why not?
It's for Star Wars. What other sensors can we put in here? Yeah.
There's IR blaster. So.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So that's built in so you can actually control your TV or other infrared controlled devices. Should your controller fall down behind the sofa or something?
Basically, just looked at the shopping list and says, what can we possibly fit in here now?
I have to say, my Nexus, one of the most annoying things about the Nexus is it's glass back. It doesn't have any friction on any surface. It falls off anything. And it's one of the, even on the very slightest of inclines, if I leave my phone for any length of time, it eventually will fall off just because it doesn't have any friction at all. It's amazing.
I found that with the iPhone. It felt the glass back and front just feels slippy.
Yeah. And
just certain times it was just like, it's falling. I've gripped it and it's falling.
I've been in other rooms and seriously, you know, I've left the phone on the arm of my sofa, and genuinely that's quite a flat surface, flat leather surface. And, you know, I've been gone to get a cup of tea or something, and the next thing you hear is this gonk as it's fallen off. It's amazing.
But your house is possessed.
It's either very slippery or...
But I can see the ghost behind you right now.
Yeah, don't say that. Let's move on, unless you've got anything else to say about...
I guess the surprising thing, hardware is all like super spec, and it's like 5 megapixel, and it's 5 inches, and it's 1080p. But it was the amount of people that are saying that's actually quite boring, and we are reaching that point now where there's only so much you can do.
It's so norm that you've got this tiny screen with full 1080p. It's ridiculous that that's normal.
But design-wise, they're not... Until we have some sort of breakthrough in, you know, curved screens or, you know, flexible screens or battery technology.
They sold 40 million units of their previous design, and Apple hasn't changed it for the last 2.5, you know?
That was the point. When Apple didn't change much last year, they were lambasted as, this is boring.
They got celebrated
blah.
For having a slight different coloration.
Yeah. And this is much the same as well. You know, and it'll sell bucket loads. It'll sell absolute bucket loads.
And probably rightly so. You know,
and the one last point, that presentation, I watched it because so many people were saying it was terrible. Oh my God.
I haven't watched it. Was it really, really bad?
Oh, I mean, it was all show tunes and sexist nonsense and just like, and the guy constantly clapping himself and clapping the product who's presenting. It was like actually, and that's all you could hear.
Oh dear.
It was just this one guy kind of slow clapping and looking smug. It was like, yeah, great. Well done.
There you go. Dropbox, they've bought Mailbox. Mailbox being the service that was, let's get your inbox empty. Let's do it in a kind of nice way. So there you go. Dropbox have bought them.
Yep. New company name, Botbox. Sorry. That was old and tired last week. Never mind today.
Never mind. that's interesting. So they're saying that they're kind of tying in with the, you know, they say their company aligns together and, why not, basically? But also, why? And you've got some thoughts that it might be to do with email and attachments.
Similar discussions started off, and bearing in mind, there's no official figure, but it seems around 100 million have paid for a company that's only been out 3 weeks. And yes, they got lots of press, and they've been talked. I mean, Mailbox has been talked about for about 4 or 5 months because some
in
of the early gadget, investors,
in the tech community. Not wider than that, really.
Oh, no, not wider than that.
The problem is we live in this bubble where our news feeds are constantly shipped by it's like this incestual thing where one thing gets pinged around about 7 million times. So you think it's being talked about really widely, but actually it's not. It's just Well, the same thing being ping ponged.
But it's weighed in a community that does kind of shape what's going on tech wise.
Yeah, sure. Okay. And so, yeah, I'm underselling it. Sure.
Yeah. The only thing that was odd about Mailbox, so it had been out for 3-4 weeks, very controversial because that kind of queuing system. And I'll be honest, I mean, I've still not launched it, even though I'm at the top of the queue and I can get in. Couldn't be arsed because I do have multiple mail accounts. You could only use one. And I've got inbox zero already. Shaq, on the other hand, it was a real driver to actually get it organized, and it really helped him, and he loves the app. Because previously he was on totally, he kept on saying to me, send it to my Yahoo account. I want it to come out of my Yahoo mail. Stop sending me stuff in Gmail. As soon as he got this, send this in Gmail, please. So it really seems to have clicked for a lot of people. Seemingly the buyout came after they started discussions about how can they do things around attachments. And if you look at how Dropbox works just now, especially on iOS, if you look at how the mail app works, it's all very separate. Still, you know, you can attach maybe a photo, or you can go into photos and say send it, or you can go into an individual application and say mail from there. But it's not very well integrated, and you do wonder, are they seeing some sort of synergy where they could be offering up a mail service as well? Does it take Mailbox onto Android? Because obviously it's an iOS at the moment only.
Yeah, and I think, like a lot of people, I use Dropbox for that. You know, I do dump a big file into Dropbox, and then it's really easy then just send the link to someone. So,
absolutely.
So if you can integrate that with a nice mail client, then it keeps you relevant in a world where Google is making it very, very easy to store things on their drives cloud and share that out.
And I mean, recently Dropbox bought, I think it was a photo editor, a couple of different photo editing firms as well. I think one was editing, one was around kind of displaying albums. And you kind of think, are they trying to build up a portfolio to match Google? You know, they're trying to say, we can compete in the cloud, here's a range of simple apps.
Because it was very much Dropbox were there first, and Google has caught up really, and because of their user base, it's just an easy thing for them to do.
Yes.
So I guess it's keeping them relevant. Yeah, but you know, they're still relying on Google Mail underneath all that, because the Mailbox does rely on that, doesn't it? So.
And that's the kind of interesting thing. If it got to the point, and I know Google trades on the don't be evil, but if they ever turned around and said, actually, we're not going to allow you access somehow, you know, some way of actually flicking a switch to say no.
I doubt they will, to be honest, but yeah, okay, fair enough. They could do, and we thought that probably about other few other things that have come about recently.
Never know. And obviously, what we're seeing also is a lot of companies saying we can't build on somebody else's API because they can just, you know, we've seen that with Apple Maps. I'm sure the only reason they stood that up was to get away from Google, because they can't build and rely on that service.
Yes, so certainly it's driven by Google's wants and desires, isn't it? And here you go, they're sucking you in with another API, their collaborative API, and Google Drive real-time API. So this is effectively them exposing their API calls that they use for their docs and spreadsheets and things, and opening them up to other people. And you can effectively build an app which you can collaboratively store it in their drive, basically. I'm not imaginative enough to think of an application off the top of my head, but if you want that so that multiple people can be dealing with it at the same time, you can now hook into their APIs to do that.
And certainly, yeah, I mean, Drive, when we use it for docs, we use that a couple of times with Sheets. Not done anything really with Slides, but then, you know, you think of things like, you know, you mentioned earlier about brainstorming and mind mapping and those kind of, you know, group type things, where it might be better to, you know, present a front end where multiple people can interact at the same time.
Yeah, and the technology is open, so you can use the drive and storage. You can store whatever data models you want, really. You know, to quite sophisticated graph, you know, and things like that level. So it's pretty impressive stuff, and now open for other people to use, which is good.
Yes.
Google Keep is the next one. Google have been hammering it recently. We talked about them most of last week, and now we're talking about them again. But Google Keep is Evernote for Google, really.
Well, it's a really simple Evernote for Google.
Yeah, okay. It's basically, you can store notes. You know, where you were capturing a note on, say, your phone before, now that will get stored in Google Drive and will be available on, you know, across all your platforms within the Google empire. But you can snap pictures as well and whack them in there and take voice memos and stuff like that.
And it was a speed. I tried it last night, and you know, I was doing a voice memo on the Android on the Nexus, and it came back the translation. It stores the audio file as well,
so it keeps the audio. Okay.
Yeah, so the audio plus the translation. If one translation was really good, the other was not.
Yes.
My confidence in Google understanding Glaswegian slightly dipped last night.
Yeah, you know what? It's been hit and miss for me as well. Strange, I guess it has been strange words it's struggled with, but it's you know, sometimes I've tried to articulate. You know, when you try and over articulate and probably make it worse. Yeah.
But I just I went into Chrome and all the content was there already.
Yes.
Snapped some pictures, went back and it was there, and it was like, ooh. That's nice. That sync, instant sync, is really quite slick.
The world of cloud is coming. It's coming. It's here, basically. It's just by the back door almost. And that's available to anyone running Android 4, so ice cream or later. Ice cream sandwich or later. So
yeah.
Pretty impressive stuff.
Well, it is, but at the same time, it's free, and Google will probably kill it in 2 years' time.
Yeah, so it's really great. Well, they shut it down.
I'm sure they had a Google Note before that they shut down.
Maybe this is a kind of later incarnation. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. We are at their whim. That was a bit of a sore reader thing, wasn't it, going on there? But yeah.
Oh, I'm still bummed.
You're reeling.
And, however, and that's why I've put the quote in. Google Keep. Save what's on your mind until we shut it down.
Feedly, loving the fact that Google Reader's gone though. Feedly were one of the companies that were sort of issued as possible alternatives last week. When Google announced they were going to shut down Reader, and they've had 500,000 new users in basically in a week. In fact, it's a shorter time than that. I think 48 hours, they're saying, which has rather kept them on their toes as far as they're just desperately trying to keep the service up and running at the moment, which you can understand. 500,000 users is not to be sniffed at. But yeah, there we go. They're doing all right. And I think plenty of other people are reacting now as well. So we're unfortunately going to get to the situation of, out of nothingness, we're going to get a billion different options as to what we're going to use as an RSS reader client.
Which I guess I'm kind of fine with. I was actually really surprised with Feedly because I tried it. It was one of these early iPad apps that I tried and I dismissed really quickly. It just wasn't for me. But it's come on leaps and bounds. Really nice front end in both the web and the tablet. And the nice thing I liked was, although they do the kind of flipboardy magazine type interface, which is fine for some content, as I said last week, I want to sift through, see if they do actually have a nice reader S type view that you can just sift through really quickly. I was quite impressed. I don't know if I'm impressed with so many people moving from a free service that shut down to another free service.
Where are you going to bounce to next, kind of thing?
But they are advert driven, so they do have ads, and so it's not, Reader was totally, we'll stick this
and
up for free.
Was the import pretty seamless? Because they said it was going to be pretty seamless.
It was fantastic.
Okay, well, that's the major selling point then, isn't it? The fact that you can go from one to the other without any too much issue.
There was no real import. It was basically just signing your Google credentials. And there's all my feeds. And okay, it kept all the folders. Because I think some of the other ones I've tried in the meantime, they don't have the kind of folder structure. And yes, lots of people probably don't have the same amount of feeds as I, but I do. And I like going in and if I'm busy, some feeds I can just say mark as read, I don't care. And there's other ones it's like, I must see what Chris Hutchison's been up to in the racetrack. Yes, I have to read that.
I should be top of anyone's list.
You always are. Oh God, it's got a bit gay.
You put me off now. Right. So Digger building a reader replacement as our Flipboard. So they're two big players already, which would be interesting to see what they come up with, I guess.
Yes, so they're two on top of the, I think we mentioned three or four last week that were alternatives as well. So lots of choice. And I think there's plenty of time for, it's fair enough, it's a bit of work for some app developers, you know, apps like Reader and Mr. Reader that I know of. And what was the other one? Press that we mentioned last week. They're going to have to look around and see what comes out as a good service. NetNewsWire also announced that they'd kind of stopped their own sync service years ago and went to Google Reader. So they are, they're building their own sync service, and they're going to bring out new apps. And they seemingly were deciding that last year, but thought they had plenty of time, and they're having to accelerate to meet that demand as well. So it's actually, I think as Marco Arment said last week, it's actually going to drive quite a lot of competition now.
The redwood has fallen over in the forest, and the little saplings are racing to fill that light hole.
Oh, brings tear to a glass eye.
Three, the lucky little mites have been gobbling up
three.
I've been gobbling up 4G spectrum left, right and centre for very little money. So basically, the owner of Three is Lee Ka-shing, That's I think that's how you say it. So he's one of the richest people in the world, but he's got a slice of the 4G spectrum from EE pretty much for nothing, because I think EE were positioning themselves during the auction to try and grab more of the expensive band, which was 800 megahertz. That was the penetrative band, wasn't it? The one that could go everywhere and would get into homes because the waves were sufficiently enough to microwave you. But basically their positioning didn't work out too well because they gave away a whole ton of their spectrum to make sure they weren't subject to a competition commission. Gave it to the smallest player, three, who said, thank you very much, we'll take that. And then three got just as much of the 800 spectrum as EE did. They didn't get as much as they wanted because other people outbid them.
Plucky little three.
So they're doing quite well. So this, no wonder he's, Mr. Cushing.
Yeah, I just thought it was a nice little story after it, because a lot of the talk has kind of died down. I mean, there was some stuff today about.
It's interesting that you still say plucky little three, because they've got 10 million customers. You know, that's not to be sniffed at. That's an awful lot.
No, but they're
people.
Always. They're always seen as a small company.
Yeah, but EE, which are considered to be the biggest, have only got 27 million. So it's not like, you know.
You say only, but that's three times.
Well, it's not quite three times, is it? It's nearly three. Fair enough, it's cutting hairs. But that's three times the size, but of a massive market. You know, in a market which is only divided in, four. Anyway.
Also, there's a whole back-end infrastructure that they've got and all that kind of stuff. They're always seen as a smaller one, and I just think this is great. Well done, three.
I forgot to tell you we were doing a couple of updates on previous stories, but that was the end of our updates on previous stories. Smooth and slick. right, on to some big stories for this week. So press regulations all coming to the fore now, because the government have defined what they're going to implement based on the Leveson report. And in our little sphere of little tech bloggers and regurgitators of news, effectively, that's a nice way of putting it, isn't it? Digital Outbox for all your regurgitation needs.
We regurgitate better than anyone else.
So basically, it's do we come under this regulations? Do we have to be sign up to this? And if we don't sign up to this regulation, what can we be punishable on if we regurgitate news that happens to be offensive or was gotten by ill ways, basically? And it's unclear.
The whole thing's a mess. And so they did the crazy, backroom deal, allegedly so that everybody could save face. They all came out and said they had won.
Everybody wins.
And the problem was everybody won apart from every newspaper that reported on it said it was a mess.
Yes.
But they've obviously got their own agenda to tell you why it's a mess. So I found it very difficult on Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah, because you get the horror stories, don't you, first, of everyone going, oh my God, that means bloggers are going to be fined £200,000 straight away.
And it was interesting because it was, Maria Miller actually had to come out and start making statements about how it would affect bloggers, which I'm sure they never intended they would have to do.
Sign of the times.
but they actually had to state, said new rules were designed to protect small-scale bloggers and to ensure that the publishers of special interest hobby and trade titles such as the Angling Times and the wine magazine Decanter are not caught up in the regime. But Hello Magazine would be subject to regulation. And I think this is part of part of the problem, that they're not wanting to target certain titles. But in effect, they are starting to target certain titles.
So it's one of those things where, when you look at the grand scheme of the, the wording and stuff, they know what it's designed to cover and what it's really not designed to cover. Yet trying to define down exactly where that cutoff is impossible. And it's
exactly.
And so it's gonna have to go through the courts several times to work out where that is and how do you define it.
And stupidly, Stitch then went on and said one man band or a single blogger would not be affected. And you're thinking, well, that's fine, but, and I know he no longer does it, but Guido Fawkes at Order, he was a one man band. And I know he's not now and he's got a small team. But one man band that posted some ridiculous comments and still argues to this day it's all fact, even though people are saying it's clearly not fact. But he's got a loyal band.
Some of the most
thousands.
Libelous websites out there are the people who are one man bands. Just, very clever people. Yeah. But, they are single people.
Student and not-for-profit community newspapers will not be caught under the new rules. And it's like, there's all these different categories that you're saying are not going to be outside this new legislation.
It's hard to legislate for things, and it's even harder when I understand why it's hard, and I understand all the. But we're just living in that uncertainty now about what does that actually mean for us. Hopefully, we won't get fined before it's all sorted out by something. We've got to hope that someone else's court case is going to sort all this out, not our own.
Well, the thing is, you've got the kind of. I'm trying to remember. There was Private Eye and I can't remember Spectator. They've come out and says we won't be signing up. All the other main newspapers have said we're taking legal advice. Yeah. We're not saying any other way right now.
Yeah.
And none of the big blogs have really said anything because they were quoting things like, is Huffington Post considered to be under that rule? And people were saying yes, and they're saying, well, we don't think we are. Because we're a blog site. It's nothing
again,
to do
it's,
with...
It's pretty much, you know, we could be... accused of head in the sand, just that it'll go away, which is true because that's what we will do and that's what we'll hope will happen. But you know, if you're slightly bigger than a bigger setup than just two people chatting over a, you know, and recording when you are chatting, then you've got to probably take at least notice of it.
I think the silly thing was to start saying like single bloggers, you know, because that was the
all the single bloggers. Oh, sorry,
oh, nice.
I don't know where that came from.
Probably from Dancing on Ice from 3 weeks ago. That's worrying. I just think going down that route, it just starts to, you can't differentiate from between, you know, single and big. It's almost like it's only big journalistic teams that we're you know, wanting to cover. Some of the single blog, I mean, look at Darren Fireball. So there's John Gruber, one guy, posting about Apple.
Quite an influential guy.
and the amount of traffic that he can generate. Yeah. You know, they always talked about, you know, fireballing websites. Ironically, his has been down for most of this week.
Right.
But, you know, he can post a link up and it will kill
Boom.
Sites.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a single blogger.
All the single blog. Right. So we've had, in other news, we've had Adobe CTO left and he's going to go and join Apple as chief of technology, vice president of technology. Easy for me to say. This is coming from a world where pretty much Apple killed Flash and hurt Adobe in the process, and now he's jumping ship to Apple.
3 years ago, he put up a blog post saying, you know, this supposedly magical device doesn't play our great technology.
I thought at the time he had a point, and I think he did have a point, but it didn't matter in the grand scheme of things. His point mattered nothing.
No.
Because it didn't happen anyway.
We've mentioned Gruber. We'll mention him again. He's really annoyed by this.
Yeah, and he's actually said it.
Exhibit A in the case that nearly hired Apple VP of Technology, Kevin Lynch, is a bozo, a bad hire. So he links to the Flash post, and then there's a couple other things linked to a post from 2 years ago about, you know, this and Apple. And I can see both sides of the argument. That here's a guy who worked for a competitor, was very public in his... slamming of a particular platform. It wasn't just the iPhone he went after. It was Apple the brand and Apple the way they work, and this is typical. And I mean, how, if you were working for Apple, how are you going to feel now if he's your boss?
Loyalty. If you're inside a company and you see it being stabbed in the back, you're going to say something, aren't you? And that's what happened to it.
And at the same time, I can see the view. The guy who worked for Adobe. They're the guys that pays money. He's not going to sit back and go, yeah, Apple's probably like, we should really ditch Flash. He's not going to publicly say that. So it's,
yeah, of course he's not.
I can see both sides of the argument. It does feel a bit like John Browett when he joined from Dixon's, and everybody thought that sounds wrong.
Yeah, but the problem is that this is I think we said at the time, when Steve sadly had to leave, these are the hundreds of cuts. It's the mass opinion that then kills something, not because it's a bad decision, but just because everyone thinks it's going to be a bad decision and everyone thinks they know best. And then what's worse, everyone thinks they know what Steve would do in the same situation. This is how slowly things get cut to death. And I think this is the start of that process for Apple. They've got to figure out how they're going to get over this you know, everyone criticizing every single decision. Because, you know, when Steve was there, he would shut people down if they started criticizing things. Doesn't matter if he was right or wrong. It was, you know, always knew that he knew what was in his mind. And they've got to find someone else to do that. Otherwise, they're going to start getting pressure from shareholders and they're going to start doing things badly because of it.
And I mentioned John Brough. It was an interesting... He actually went public last week for the first time since he sacked him and said they learned a lot. And it was that he was the wrong fit. He just did not fit into that type of company. But they only found that out when he started working there.
Again, you know, we can sit there and go, that's easy. But he could have been an inspired decision. We don't know. We don't really know.
No.
It wasn't an inspired decision, but that's beside the point.
But I mean, and it's interesting because this guy's currently a cloud expert at Adobe. So he's kind of made much of the change away from where Adobe were to being a real kind of leading light in cloud computing.
Yeah, yet to see. Yeah, software as a service was his big
but
thing.
But he's not...
Whether it's worked, we don't know that yet.
No, but he's not... At Apple, he's not joining the cloud division.
No, he's actually going to technology. So
it's... is there something very specific that Apple want to do? And usually the guys at that level, I mean, they're the guys that are really kind of... They're almost kind of like, you know, making sure the troops are following the right ways forward and being a bit more of a public face. And
well, I mean, unless they fully acknowledging that actually cloud is the technology and where they're, you know, that is the chief technology that's going on at the moment.
It's interesting. I think I don't know. There's just something doesn't smell right about it.
It feels
strange.
Okay, yeah, it does feel strange. But what you do see is that Google are definitely making more and better use of their cloud at the moment
Absolutely.
Than Apple, who have... In their restrictive nature of it, it's such a bubble that, you know, it hasn't really worked smoothly enough, compared to how most Apple things work. It's cocked up a few times.
Oh, no, it definitely doesn't. I think a lot of the developers that are trying to use, iCloud for syncing, they're realizing that it just doesn't work. It's not reliable.
It's not brilliant, no.
Nope.
Not as brilliant as most, you know, most things they do are. So, yeah.
I think it was NetNewsWire when they did their post this week saying that they're going to redevelop sync. They decided that they were going to do it on the back of iCloud, and after months they decided they can't. It's just not there.
Plus, the cloud is supposed to be this open, always available thing, and Apple's is, but only if you're in the Apple Empire. And you know, there's lots of other inputs now coming into Google, and like them opening up their APIs is an interesting step, just because it makes them the center of the universe on that front.
Definitely. And yes, iCloud's a lot more locked down, but a lot of Mac developers really only care, about Mac and iOS.
That's the whole point of it, is it's only supposed to be integrated. But I just think, you know, that again, a bit like, you know, we're seeing the iPhones, you know, get chipped away at. I don't think iCloud has ever been at that really high level that it's got anything to be chipped away at. I think Google's just, you know, going to win.
Unfortunately,
that
it's another mobile me.
It might be, but it's a mobile me. They have to make work somehow, and
it just feels like that. I mean, iMessage, I still have issues. You know, you could send an iMessage, and it's bizarre. It will not come through my laptop now, but it'll come through everywhere else. And it's like, I've signed out, I've removed my credentials, I've put them in again. Still got one kind of solitary message from January, whereas all my other devices have got most of the messages.
That's what I mean, something doesn't work. And I had the issue with my iTunes, you've had your issues with your iTunes library, to the point where it's broken as far as I could tell.
Every day now, iTunes now says, "Ooh, let's go and see what's in the cloud for you. Oh, let's upload all these 12,000 tracks. Oh, they're already there, wasn't that quick?" Every day.
Yeah, I'm quite glad that you're seeing the issues as well. It wasn't just me, because at some points it just felt like it was just me. And it was like, oh, I'm sad. Anyway, it just made me move away from that. And now I'm using the Google Music, so there we go. Internet Pioneers. There was a prize up for grabs, £1 million engineering prize. Was open for nominations. No one nominated me, which is a bit disappointing. As the nominations closed, and now it's been given to some old geezer. In fact, three relatively old people.
It's a bit harsh.
No, I think it's accurate. Go on, take us through what's happened.
So basically, Internet Pioneers have been given £1 million. This is it's a Queen Elizabeth Award. It's a Queen Elizabeth Prize for Engineering. So it's the first year that's ran. The panel was made up of a variety of different engineers.
Guess who? Mr. Universally Everywhere.
Mr. Brian Cox.
There we go.
And it's funny because they said 15-strong judging team, which included physicist Brian Cox and former engineering chief Lord Alec Brewers. And it's like Tumbleweed was just drifting through when I mentioned him. Like, yeah, and maybe I should know him. Hey. But out of all the nominations, they went for the Internet Pioneers. So this is Sir Tim Berners-Lee, which I think everybody's heard about.
Yes.
But also alongside that, there was Vint Cerf, Robert Kahn. So there was, I think there was another four. So there was Louis Poussin as well was honoured. So there was five winners in total.
So Poussin or Poussin.
Mark Anderson. Yep.
He was the, you know,
Poussin.
In fact.
That's it. You belittle Poussin? My pronunciation.
Monsieur Poussin. He put the foundations in that sort of Tim Berners-Lee and worked on top of, if you like. So he was the first one to sort of come up with a network where it sent packets of data. So you didn't have to have a ton of, a constant stream of communication, basically. It worked in little packets, which was much more resilient, especially in a world where your networks are going over copper wires, which we still are using, basically. So he was kind of inspired this thing, and he was sort of also recognized by this award. So it's good. And I guess ongoing, now that they've got some of the big ones out of the way, they can start really looking at who's making that impact and who's doing what. I hope they're not just giving, you know, million. It'd be nice to see £1 million goes to enhance some more, you know, future technologies.
And I think I'd like as well for it to be something that's happened. It'd be great if it was something that happened there last year, so you felt you were rewarding something now.
But then
a lot of this stuff was done.
This is filling in gaps that weren't recognised because these people have largely been unrecognised. That's the problem, isn't it? One day they will be recognised, and even Sir Tim Berners-Lee, who is widely recognised, has not really been rewarded for his work.
No, and I think you touched on it earlier. We're living in that kind of really close tech circle where all these names sound familiar to us, but to everybody else, it's probably who's he.
Yeah.
And the quote I thought which was really good was from Vint Cerf. His quote is, "This is like waking up from a really exciting dream and discovering the geeks are winning."
Yeah, it's good. Geeks rule. That's come with great power comes great responsibility. And as ever, if you want to find out, we haven't got any picks this week, have we? I was going to say. I thought I'd miss. Have you got a pick?
I could recommend Alfred too. So I think Alfred was one of my picks many moons ago. So it's one of these kind of launch tools. Alfred 2 came out last week.
Okay.
Everything rewritten. Everything rather lovely. Fantastic new.
Launching things in a much more lovely way.
Well, the one thing that was really nice, I've got this thing called Workflows, which allows you to, you know, launch Alfred and put in, you know, a certain command and take my next entry and go and search these three websites and bring the results back and store it in here. So it allows you to kind of do a lot more. And on the forums, there's loads of people now starting to share their workflows.
Okay.
And it's all about thinking, you know, it could be like, go and grab this file and go and do this with it. So it's another really nice addition. I love Alfred. So I've now become, can't remember, I think it was like $10 to upgrade and $20 to buy or $30 to get lifetime upgrades, and it's like, you can have my $30.
Yeah.
Or 30, 30 quid, because it's a British company.
So where do we go for Alfred? Alfredapp.com. There we go, it looks like.
Yeah, good job.
Okay, so thanks for that. And as ever, if you want to find out more about us, about what we do and what we're talking about, digitaloutbox.com is the website. Email us info@digitaloutbox.com. I'm having real trouble talking today. info@digitaloutbox.com, and Twitter and Skype, Digital Outbox. I am on Twitter as GZUK. And you can, as ever, follow my racing antics at academyracer.co.uk. Ian, where can we find you?
I am on Twitter as Sweeper. And my blog is indeed.net.
Perfecto. I will put my teeth in, and we will be back next week to talk at you, regurgitate some more. Speak to you then. Bye.
Goodbye. Next week, when you regurgitate, going to make sure that people can understand you.
Yeah, I'll regurgitate in bigger chunks than. Blah, blah, blah. It is Thursday, the 21st of March, and this is episode. This is episode 100. Oh, God. It was going well again. I'm going to rock straight in.